Welcome to Plain Talk. Plain Talk has over 100 podcasts containing up-to-date information about aviation technologies and pilot experiences for general and business aviation. From home to cockpit to boardroom to personal tech, Plain Talk provides informative information for pilots, industry insiders, and aviation enthusiasts alike. My name is Phil Lightstone. I'm a general aviation pilot with over 2,100 hours in my logbook, flying almost every week with over 30 years' experience in the technology and aviation industries. Well, just want to welcome into the Plain Talk cockpit, Mark Brooks. We're here at the Buttonville Airport in a massive snowstorm, and it's gone like Yeti IFR, not low IFR, Yeti IFR. It's the only thing we see is white. A little bit about Mark. Mark transitioned from the tech industry after the tech crash in the 2000s into aviation with over 6,700 hours. He's my idol. Flying 1,000 hours a year. Mark's a Class 2 flight instructor up here in the Great White North. Got his PPL in 1995. Twin IFR rated, flight instructor Class 2, as I said. He gets to fly the best cool airplanes, pistons and turbines. And every now and then one of them turns into a glider, but I'm sure he'll think about actually getting into the glider.
Not recently, yeah.
And has been teaching aviation for over 15 years with the folks at Canadian Flyers, beginning at the Markham Airport and then transitioning to the Buttonville Municipal Airport. He gets to ferry aircraft all over North America. What a cool job. And South America, I might add. Mark, what's the furthest ferry flight you've done?
Well, I went to Buenos Aires. I took a Cirrus to Buenos Aires from Toronto. Brought one back from Brazil. Been down the south side, the west side of the Andes, to the southern parts of Peru and Chile, and then over the Andes into Buenos Aires.
Wow. And why don't you just talk to us about your volunteer work.
Probably several decades now, I've been volunteering my time with the Flying Club, the Buttonville Flying Club, past president, 2008 to 2011, a volunteer spot. Young Eagles, COPA for Kids, once in a long time ago, Hope Air flights. I've been doing a lot of writing recently, too, in support of the need for new aviation infrastructure and working with a group inside the Flying Club called the Friends of Pickering Airport.
The kind of roller coaster environment at the Buttonville Municipal Airport, which is a wonderful airport I learned to fly, but with the owners and management having this roller coaster of, we've sold the airport, or we have sold some of the airport, and we're going to be closing in the near future. And then that turned into, no, we're here to stay for a long time. And then that said, we're just sold 100% out to Cadillac Fairview and closing this whole roller coaster. But now the latest, of course, is the airport's going to be, knock on wood, open for a very long time. But that really prompted a group of folks to try to take destiny into their own hands and create a volunteer organization looking at an air park at Pickering to fulfill the federal government's promise that was made decades ago to build another airport in the Greater Toronto Area. Do you want to just give us a little background on that whole journey?
Well, when the announcement came out that the airport could close at some point in the future, back in 2011, I was president of the club at the time, and we started thinking about what we could do, and the business case for the airport here is actually quite strong, and any new airport in Pickering also has a very strong business case, and so It was easy enough to find private investors that would be interested in building the airport. And so we proposed building an air park with them completely private money. And that was a what's meant to be a not-for-profit to give our flight training operations and other related businesses a place to operate out of if Buttonville closed.
And GA airplanes.
And GA, yeah. So this was business and GA. But remember, Buttonville is just a hopping airport at this point. We got turbines, we get jets, flight training, helicopters, everything. Medical, police.
And we've had from Cessna 150s to their smaller brothers, Hercules
C-130. Yeah. Okay, that's a one way of looking at it. Yes, we've had a number of aircraft over the years, and we're the go-to airport, GA airport for the Toronto area. From a utility point of view, it would be it's hard to fathom how a lot of the activity and actions that are happening here could survive if this airport closed. There's no place for them to go. There's no place to, for instance, open a new flight school in the Toronto area within a an hour's commute of the bulk of the population of the GTA. So, and that long term, that is going to impact the training of commercial pilots, which we are desperately short of.
And we see, within the airports in the Greater Toronto area, as the developers build more residential homes, which is another problem that the province has, lack of affordable housing. So that creates the whole noise impact that we've seen a lot of debate at the Oshawa Airport.
That's correct. So all of the airports, the two ones that we're leaning on right now, which are Oshawa and Buttonville, were designed and laid out before the jet age. And so they don't have international standard overruns. They don't have the runways of the appropriate length. They don't have the noise buffer, the area between residential neighborhoods and the airport itself. And so from a lifestyle point of view, from a health and safety point of view, a new airport, out in Pickering, surrounded by a purposely designed and built noise buffer and something called the phaser, which is the Pickering Airport zoning regulations, gives us a huge advantages from a flight training and flight operations point of view. Doesn't mean that Buttonville or Oshawa have to close. It just means that the type of operations need to be more appropriate to the size and of the airport itself. And I'm sure that the city of Oshawa would agree. They're trying to call flight training activity right now out of Oshawa, unfortunately, in order to reduce the noise. And of course, at Buttonville, we're on pins and needles as to when the airport might close.
Well, and with that said, Pearson, pre-COVID, of course, saw a huge uptick in aircraft inbound, outbound, more passenger activity, more cargo activity, and essentially, maxing out. How would a Pickering International Airport deal with the travel mayhem that we see at Pearson?
Well, the challenge is now that we're back to 2019 travel levels, and we're looking at growing. We're basically looking at doubling the number of flights in Canada in the next 30 years. So from a worldwide point of view, the growth, passenger and utility, aviation and cargo, is on a steady growth pattern for the primary reason that aviation is the linchpin of the global free market economy that Canada is a huge part of. And without the capacity to enable that growth, we can be looking forward to years of mayhem like we saw just this last Christmas, where the slightest hiccup, broken luggage belt, a snowstorm can cause a backup in the system with no capacity to recover from that backup. And whatever the disruption is caused by, you need capacity not just for day-to-day operations when everything's going perfectly, but for operations so that when there's a disruption, you have the space. That's both landing slots, terminals, infrastructure to catch up. And it's not just passenger aviation. At this point, a third of Canada's international trade by value goes by air. And so passenger aviation is what the average consumer sees. But behind the scenes, there's something far more important happening in addition to the passenger aviation, which is utility. And all the airports, Hamilton, Waterloo, City Center, Oshawa, and now the new Pickering Airport, have a role to play in increasing the capacity of the GTA as it grows to support that growth.
Well, and with that said, the other piece of the puzzle is the infrastructure required to get the staff who work at an international airport to the airport, as you said, during a snowstorm, inclement weather, traffic jams.
Just getting to and from Pearson Airport, if you live out in Oshawa at this point, is a challenge. It can be a two-hour experience if in bad traffic. Imagine going from Oshawa to Hamilton as an example. So the need is for local accessible aviation capacity, and for a whole lot of reasons.
And people.
And from a training point of view, of course, we need to be producing twice as many commercial pilots as we were pre-19, pre-COVID. But instead, we're producing a third. And we're losing the capacity to train new pilots, as well as the opportunities for those careers for young men and women that would want to take that as a career path.
What would the economic benefits associated with the development of a Toronto in the Toronto East be, for lack of a better word?
Probably the clearest example of the role of a modern airport is Pearson itself. It's now Canada's second largest employment zone. It employs something like 300,000 people. It creates, tens of billions of dollars worth of value every single year, $1 billion plus worth of tax revenue. So if you take Pickering Airport, which initially is going to be aiming to have a quarter of the passenger capacity as Pearson, talking about 15 million passengers a year, cargo operations, and a huge enterprise zone around the airport. So you're talking about 50,000 jobs. And for each one of those jobs that is created at the airport and in the enterprise zone around the airport, there's at least one other job created in the associated area. So the economic value of that is something close to $10 billion worth of economic activity to the GDP and a tax revenue of potentially $1 billion plus.
And then we shouldn't forget about the initial employment opportunities for the folks to build the airport.
Something like 41,000 man years will be required to build the airport. And depending on the design and which proposal is accepted, be built in multiple stages between now and 2050. And the first version, in theory, could open in as early as 2028.
What would attract businesses to relocate to a new airport in Pickering?
Well, you have to understand what's missing now in the Toronto area. And one of the things that's missing is accessible commercial land. I'm not talking about office towers and white collar workers here. We're talking about industrial land. One of the clients I do work for is a transportation company, and they recently leased undeveloped land in and around the Mississauga area to support trucking operations at $10,000 an acre a month.
Yikes.
Yeah, so stop and think about that. Right now, the Pickering lands and the enterprise zone that it'll support is being leased out to a handful of farmers for $120 an acre a year. So that gives you an idea of the potential development and the value of that land. We're talking about billions of dollars worth of land. And that enterprise zone and supporting the airport also has a huge value to the community around it, not the least of which is it'll cut the property taxes for a resident in Pickering in half. So if you're a homeowner in Pickering, you could expect to see the city double its tax revenue from that enterprise zone. And that'll directly reduce your costs, reduce your property taxes. But that's not just Pickering. It affects the Durham region as well, because two-thirds of that revenue that's collected by the city of Pickering gets passed up to Durham region. And it'll even affect neighboring areas such as Markham and Stouffville, providing economic value and enabling the development of industrial zones and land. So, and remember, that land is set aside and zoned for industrial development. It's not part of the Greenbelt.
Why not invest and expand into the Oshawa Airport instead?
Well, one look at the Oshawa Airport tells you why. For starters, they looked at expanding the runway and the residents said no. And the reason is that Oshawa is surrounded by homes. And so in order to expand the Oshawa Airport to the level that would be required, it would basically require the expropriation of thousands of existing homes at $1 billion of cost. And it would create an airport in the middle of a city with flight paths directly over most of the major neighborhoods in Oshawa.
So major safety and, of course, noise problem.
Well, yeah, lifestyle. You're now imposing on the people of Oshawa is something that was never designed, planned for. The design, the plan, was to build an airport in Pickering so that the people in Oshawa and in Ajax and other areas would not have to have, you know, jets coming over their heads 500 feet up.
And practically speaking, what's the longest runway at Oshawa right now?
Well, it's 4,400 feet. However, a runway is not just the length. In order to put an ILS in place, instrument landing system, you need at least a 5,000-foot runway. And it was proposed that that be done at Oshawa, and it was turned down for the obvious reasons.
But the fact is, you're not bringing a Boeing 747 or an Airbus A380 in and out of a 4,000 foot runway.
No, and also there's no room there for international standard overrun areas. And we recently just saw the important need from a safety point of view of international standard overrun areas in our airports. None of the existing or older airports in the Toronto area, and that includes Billy Bishop, that includes Oshawa and Buttonville, have international standard overrun areas.
The real challenge is, based upon the current congestion at Pearson Airport, based upon the current land in use around the airport, there is not an ability to put more runways in, which is really the only way to increase capacity.
Well, you do have to be careful with the capacity issue, because capacity is not just about landing slots, although that's an important part of it. And could you add a sixth runway into Pearson? Oh, yes, there actually is a design to put it in, but it would not add that many movements. It would add maybe 12 movements an hour to Pearson, and at great cost. At great cost to the airport while the runway is being built, at great cost to the neighborhood and surrounding area, because you now have another approach path. During any sort of inclement weather, even a mild environment, the number of planes landing at Pearson slows down.
And then part of the trickle-down capacity challenge is ramp space, more gates, more infrastructure to handle more passengers, like ticketing, TSA, gates, etc.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of what would be needed would be what happened at Newark Airport. It was a decade-long rebuild of that airport. It cost tens of billions of dollars, not just for the airport itself, but for the infrastructure around the airport, the roads, the public transit, the fuel, getting the fuel systems. One of the biggest challenges that Pearson's going to have in the future will be the new types of aviation technology that's coming along that are requiring or based on aircraft that are half the size of the current one. So the hybrid electric, the new fuels, there's just not the room for that. So we've seen a world where aircraft have increased in size. Now we're seeing a world where the technology is taking us down or back to the 737 style the single aisle jets, rather than the huge Airbus 380s. And so the idea that we could simply pump up the size of the aircraft is a non-starter. Pearson is already one of the worst performing airports in North America, and it's held that title for years before COVID, and it's getting worse. And it's not because it's not well managed. It is extremely well managed. It is one of the best managed airports in the world. The management team is doing miracles with that airport, but you can only ask so much. You cannot negotiate with the laws of physics. And there are safety standards that have to be met. The Canadian public demands that the operators of the airlines and the airport meet. And without additional infrastructure, we will begin to impact those safety standards.
Being a glass half full kind of guy, once the new Pickering Airport opens, what happens to Oshawa?
Oshawa can remain open. There's no reason why it has to close. That's sort of a bit of a red herring. Although Oshawa City Council has indicated their interest in redeveloping that land because it is in the middle of the city, and it is worth a lot of money from its location. But it doesn't have to shut down. It can continue to provide the valuable services that it is now, especially from a training point of view. There's two flight schools there, and a lot of independent flight training activity as well. Of course, the Piper and Diamond dealers are there. The firm Aviation Unlimited, which I'm privileged to do some work for every now and then, is based at Oshawa, and there's a lot of corporate activity there as well. And so it can operate as a profitable airport in conjunction and in coordination with Pickering.
Well, sounds like an interesting new opportunity to change the Canadian landscape. How do you see Mark Brooks fitting into this nirvana?
Well, so initially when we started the Pickering Air Park proposal, we discovered right away that it wasn't a business case, wasn't the block. It was a political problem, a lack of political understanding of aviation, lack of vision, really, in terms of how aviation fits in. And so when that proposal was turned down, we continued inside the club to try and figure out the Gordian knot of the Pickering lands, and try to highlight the need to get going on the project. And there's now a much bigger player that's stepped forward and is proposing a much bigger airport than anything that we had envisioned. But along the way, along this path, this journey, we've discovered a lot. And so we want to communicate that. We're freely volunteering, myself and others are volunteering our knowledge and expertise to communicate what we've discovered. The rather strange, world of aviation to many, to us is the future, and cannot be understated. The efficiency of aviation today, it's the most, taking a passenger jet from Toronto to Vancouver is the most efficient way, from both a time, it's the safest, but it's also the most carbon efficient way. And in the not too distant future, that's going to net carbon zero. And so aviation is going to become worldwide the most carbon efficient way to move goods and people anywhere. And that revolution, if you will, and that's primarily a net zero emissions fuel revolution, which is coming down the pipes at us, will change and transform aviation to an extent that we haven't yet seen. There's a new golden age of aviation coming, and some say it's already here. And we need to get ready for it. If we're going to maintain economic efficiency, if we're going to maintain a prosperous nation, we need to start training the pilots. We need to understand that aviation is now the cornerstone of our economy. It's the linchpin to the rest of the world for us, and the most efficient way of doing things. It's an economic engine, and your local airport is now an economic engine for your city, for your province, for the country.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for being part of the Plane Talk cockpit. Any final words for the audience?
Our blog, the Friends of Pickering Airport, has more than 110 posts related to the Pickering Airport, its economic value, its important role in Canada's economy, how it can be built and managed by private investors, and from a volunteer point of view, I'm willing, and others are too, to make my time and expertise available to communicate the need for new aviation infrastructure in the Toronto area.
And is that www.friendsofpickeringairport?
That's Pickering. That's www.pickeringairport.org.
Even better. Thank you so much, Mark, and have a wonderful day here in our low IFR environment in Markham.
Well, it is why I'm on the ground now. Otherwise, I'd be up flying.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Plane Talk. If you have any ideas for a future Plane Talk episode, please go to the Contact Us page at planetalk.ca and send in your idea. Don't forget to like us at planetalk.ca, our Facebook and LinkedIn pages, and this podcast. And never stop living the dream.